I'm Gabrielle Jackson, and this is The Full Story.
A little prime ministerial chit-chat with a wombat. A reptile park resident named Hope.
Well, Hope, there's a lot of hope.
His own hope today, gas market reform.
Get more gas, more often, and more reliably.
Promising to unlock new gas projects and a national gas trading hub to bring down prices.
For months now, the government has been talking about a gas-led recovery. Even before the COVID-19 pandemic hit, Scott Morrison was talking about the importance of gas.
Central to this agenda is getting access to our domestic gas supplies. We need to get the gas from under our feet.
On Tuesday, the Prime Minister went deep into coal country in New South Wales's Hunter Valley to deliver a speech outlining plans for greater investment in gas.
Cheap gas, that's the key to unlocking a business recovery from COVID-19, according to the Prime Minister. Scott Morrison has unveiled a plan he says will push down power prices and pave the way for more renewables.
But the speech seems to have raised more questions than it answered.
Sure. Look, as I said, I don't quite understand the announcement. There's a lot of parts of the announcement that don't make a lot of sense, but the gas plant in the Newcastle region doesn't seem to make any sense to me.
Today, what is the government's gas-led recovery all about? It's Friday, the 18th of September. So, Merv, Scott Morrison made a speech this week. Can you tell us about that?
And livelihoods. But as long as we are closed, we cannot claim success as a country. So as we emerge from this second wave in Victoria, let's now seize the opportunity ahead of us to safely and successfully reopen this country, reconnect this country, and stay open.
Yes, it was an important speech on Tuesday.
Catherine Murphy is Guardian Australia's political editor.
The Prime Minister took himself off to the Hunter Valley.
And in areas like the Hunter, the business of generating energy is for so many your livelihood, where critical energy intensive jobs are located.
The Hunter Valley is in New South Wales and it's a coal mining region.
A JobMaker plan for affordable, reliable and more secure energy has three key objectives. First, maintain that downward pressure, down, on electricity prices.
To basically send quite a number of signals about where the government's going in relation to its gas policy. We've been hearing quite a bit. The government's been warming the public up for something that it's terming a gas-led recovery from the coronavirus pandemic.
Now, let me turn to the gas market. Cheaper, more abundant gas is the second pillar of our energy plan. We've got to get the gas.
And we're going to see a number of initiatives in the October budget that basically put flesh on the bones of the whatever the gas-led recovery is. So there were a number of elements to this speech, which was basically all about setting up this narrative in politics that the government has a recovery plan from the pandemic. Gas will be at the centre of that recovery plan, and watch this space because we're going to do all sorts of wonderful, visionary, knock your socks off stuff.
Now, I want to discuss each of these in turn, and particularly in relation to gas, I want to acknowledge.
What was your reaction when you heard all this?
Well, I laughed, but it wasn't a humorous laugh. It was a mildly horrified laugh. At one level, I couldn't believe the worst case scenario associated with what Morrison was saying. I thought, really?
My initial reaction was that we've got a lot of plans to form plans.
Adam Morton is the environment editor for Guardian Australia.
But there's nothing beyond forming some plans and a few million dollars, which is not nothing, but fairly small in the scheme of things, that it was announced on Tuesday that is going to, in itself, lead to a mass transformation. But the other thing that I was interested to know is what is the question that the government is trying to answer here? What is the evidence it has that this is necessary? and what problem is it going to fix? And I don't think we're really much closer to having an answer to that question after the Prime Minister's speech.
So that was my next question. Why? Why is the government doing this?
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple of different points of view. I mean, there's clearly a political rationale that I'll let Murph talk about. I think that would be better. But basically, it's started with the idea and set up a whole bunch of processes this year, including the much vaunted National COVID-19 Coordinating Commission led by Nev Power, who's used to be a Fortescue Metals executive and now has gas interests, and a whole bunch of other people with gas interests. They've set up a team to advise them on how to drive gas, how we're going to develop gas to not only push us out of this recovery, but also transform the energy sector. This thinking was already happening prior to COVID-19. The Prime Minister was talking about it at the press club back in February, before we knew how bad COVID was going to be. Clearly, the government has at some point internally accepted that the future is not coal. They don't come out and say that in those black and white terms all that often, because there are members of the coalition who are still very much pro-coal, particularly up in Queensland. Mm. And renewables have been coming on really rapidly in the last few years. And the government likes to take credit for that, but kind of out of the side of its mouth. And while it's true that we do need some gas in the transformation that we're going through as we're developing renewables, the government has decided that gas is the solution on a much greater level than all the evidence it has that we've seen suggests it needs to be. I think there's a lot of politics in the why there. I mean, what do you think, Murph?
The gas strategy in part is an acceptable means of moving away from coal to the next fossil fuel. And then the move away from gas, the next move will be renewables, right? But the government has sort of created this car crash in its terrible with its terrible record on climate policy, and it takes a while to creep away from a car crash, right? You can't just sprint away from a car crash. You have to move slowly away from the car crash. So in part, that's what the government's doing. It's starting the pivot to where Australia needs to go. Because its own constituency is split in the cities, progressive Liberals, full bottle on renewables, want the government to go in that direction. In the regions, the coalition has won several elections by telling people in the regions, fossil fuel workers in the regions and economies based around fossil fuel prosperity, nothing has to change. You don't have to do anything. We value your jobs. We will stick up for your interests. So the coalition has to pick itself up off coal, create a new fossil fuel transit point, which is gas, where it can say to people in the regions, we are fossil fuels all the way, we love you in traditional industries, we're always going to stick up for your interests. And in the city, gas can be marketed as the transitional fuel that brings us closer to renewables. So that's the coalition solving a problem for itself, I guess.
We need to reset the East Coast gas market, and we will. The government will lean in with measures aimed at ensuring domestic users aren't...
What's the big problem with gas, Adam?
Well, the short answer is it's a fossil fuel. People who support gas say that it emits less than coal when it's burned. That's true. It's usually about half the emissions, give or take. But its emissions, we can now see, are often higher than that because methane, which is a really potent greenhouse gas, many times more potent than carbon dioxide, is leaked during its production. And we are at a point in history where the climate scientists tell us that we should be leaving fossil fuels in the ground, not extracting them.
So does gas have any role to play in the transition away from coal?
Absolutely true that gas is a necessary part of the transition and we need some now. But I think the truth is that if you were looking at it as being a part of a transition plan and your focus was that transition, you wouldn't be giving it this sort of emphasis. It doesn't require this sort of emphasis. It has a role to play as part of a much bigger shift and a fairly minor one, to be honest, if you really were focused on a transition rather than developing a gas industry. This is not designed to deliver a transition. And it still, to me, is, I think, to some extent, the government here is delivering an answer in search of a question, right? It's, you know, we've decided gas. And the question I think it's answering is largely political, maybe to some extent ideological, but it's not the answer. They have not presented the question from an actual technical or energy point of view that is requiring the answer that they're delivering.
Based on the development of our enormous gas resources offshore, Western Australia, in Queensland, Australia is now a world-leading exporter of LNG, rivaling Qatar as the world's biggest. The $200 billion invested in LNG projects over the past decade was a key driver.
Don't we already have a lot of gas?
Yes, we do. We have loads. We have loads of gas, Gabby, loads of it, and we export most of it. And we've developed a very successful, lucrative export industry in LNG. We sell it all around the world, around the region. And we've got ourselves into a conundrum over the last few years where we're exporting so much of it that we've had supply shortages in Australia. And that then has led to a discussion about a domestic gas reservation, which is one of the things that Morrison's flagged in this set of measures, potentially. I don't think they'll do it, but anyway, it's been flagged. So, yeah, look, there's no shortage of gas, but there has been some arguments about how you make sure you look after your domestic manufacturing industry because we're selling loads of LNG overseas.
Well, I think that leads to my next question about prices. Price, price, price is what the Prime Minister and the Energy Minister seem to be saying, that this massive expansion in gas, which we already have and export, will reduce prices. Is that backed up by evidence?
Well, there's a basic economic logic. If you increase the supply of a commodity or a good, if you create more of it, you flood the market with it, that reduces the price because obviously price is determined in part by scarcity. How scarce is this good? Right. And the more scarce it is, the more expensive it'll be. So there's a basic economic logic to increase the supply, price drops. But then it's not that simple in this industry because gas producers have got to, it's a very expensive business, extraction. Right. And it requires lots of infrastructure to move gas around the place. So it's an expensive business. So one of the big unanswered questions about this, Gabby, has been how exactly does that price proposition work?
Also, no evidence has been produced that anything that the government is proposing will reduce gas prices, which have been, at least before COVID, and still are expected to return to that level, are historically high. Gas prices for domestic Australian users roughly tripled when we opened up an export market on the East Coast. So it was in line with international prices. And that hit households who use gas, that hit particularly manufacturers, and there are some manufacturing industries that are reliant on gas and use a lot of gas. The push underlying everything that's doing here is that the idea is we're going to reduce gas prices back down to something like what they were before, which was about $4 a gigajoule of gas, and then it got up to about 12. I've seen no evidence. I know no analyst who says that it's possible that we're going to get back down to that level. So especially unless we're planning to carve out a big reservation of gas in Australia that is set aside just for domestic users. And as Murph said, the government saying, Morrison is saying he'll consider that. I think it's highly unlikely they'll go down that path in a meaningful way. The industry would be up in arms. So,
could renewables make prices cheaper?
Well, renewable energy is making prices cheaper. Solar and wind are now the cheapest forms of energy. And in the electricity system, gas is the most expensive form of electricity we have because of what we've seen happening with prices. The more renewable energy we get into the electricity grid, the cheaper, theoretically, within certain constraints, the electricity should be. But there will also be costs in the transformation because, just as Murph was saying, prices are a function of supply and demand. And as we put in more and more renewable energy coal plants are going to close over time, and then there'll be less supply, and we're going to have to build more to deal with that. And as some plants come out and we have less generation, prices will increase for a period. So there's going to be a lot of up and down with prices. It's going to be quite unsettled at times as we go through this transformation. But there is no question that renewable energy is now the cheapest form of new generation, and renewable energy supported by batteries and perhaps pumped hydro is considered the long-term answer to having the cheapest possible electricity supply. Gas at the moment is considered by our regulators likely to be a more expensive option than the alternatives, batteries, pumped hydro, that sort of thing.
Next. Can Australia meet its climate obligations under this plan?
So this is the plan. If the energy companies choose to step up and make these investments to create that capacity, great. We will step back.
He also flagged, because the government has been involved in a sort of a, no, I shouldn't say sort of power struggle, because it's actually a naked power struggle.
A lot of debate around the future of Liddell. This is the coal-fired power station in the Hunter.
The Prime Minister's push to keep the Liddell coal power station open to secure supply was dismissed by owners AGL.
Removed from the concept of your belief, I like coal, I don't like coal, you better like power. If you don't like power, then you're going to find out what Australia was like to live in around about 1880.
So as part of this speech, Morrison flagged...
We estimate that some 1,000 megawatts of new dispatchable generation is needed to keep prices down. And we intend to do something about it.
If AGL or someone else didn't do what the Commonwealth wanted and replace Liddell with a quite large gas-fired power plant...
If not... My government will step up and we will fill the gap.
That the Commonwealth would come in over the top and quote-unquote do something, not clear what.
Now, the Commonwealth government would prefer not to step in. That is not our plan A. But nor will we shy away from taking action to protect consumers and support jobs, including here in this region and so many like it.
Murph, you've been covering politics for a long time. In terms of policy manoeuvring, how effective is it to say, we want you to do this, so do it, and if you don't, we'll help you do it or make you do it?
It's pretty weird. I've actually been thinking about this a fair bit this week. Like, look, at one level you think, oh, manly man, be still my beating heart. Oh, my, I crumble before this magnificent, scary pitch. But at another level, it's really stupid, right?
Now, while the private sector has announced projects which could fill this gap, at this stage it is committed to very few. They have their investment decisions. They have their processes. I respect that.
Yes, it's worth saying, I think, quickly, what AGL has planned in broad terms to replace Liddell. They laid out a plan in 2017 that would involve a bunch of new renewable energy in the area. They also were looking at doing a little bit of gas and also some batteries. They made a fairly big announcement in the last month about some batteries for the region. So they've laid out a three-stage plan that's at various points of commitment. Some of it's been financed. Some of it is still going through planning, but they're expecting to make decisions in the near future.
The problem is the government doesn't like it. The Commonwealth has picked a fight with AGL over Liddell for several years, right?
Now, this is something the government has been wrestling with for a long time. We've looked at many options. We had the Liddell Task Force, which the minister put together. We worked with the state government. We worked with some of the big users up there. We were at Tomago just the other day.
So whatever they come up with is probably not going to be enough in the eyes of the Commonwealth, because what the Commonwealth wants is another gas plant in the Hunter.
And what you need is reliable power into that market, particularly to support the almost 2,000 jobs that are up there at Tomago.
And anything short of that is not going to be good enough. But then we need to ask ourselves a couple of questions. There has been a real hesitancy to invest in energy infrastructure in Australia for the last 10 years, apart from renewables, which is a subsidised technology through the renewable energy target, right?
Mm-hmm.
And is obviously the future. Renewables is obviously the future. Renewables is a totally safe bet for any commercial operator because that's where we're going, right?
Mm.
What hasn't been the safe bet is what comes in the middle. Gas or, I don't know, bonfire, whatever your technology is, right, in the middle. No one has wanted to build that stuff because, oh, wait for it, there's no policy framework that tells people what they should build for what period of time. We had a policy framework. It was called a carbon price. The coalition came into government and they repealed the policy framework. The policy framework they put in place is a joke, is regarded by everybody as a joke. It is regarded by, you know, no one can make a decision based on the policies that the Commonwealth have put in place.
Mm.
So if I was a private operator in the energy market in Australia at the moment and the Commonwealth said, you build it or we will, I would say to the Commonwealth, great, you do it. I'm not going to lose my money building a big gas power plant that is likely to be a stranded asset within 10 years. I'm not going to put my shareholder money on the line to build that thing.
Mm.
But if you want to put taxpayers on the hook to build that thing, go to town, Angus. Go to town, Scott. Do your worst. I mean, it just sort of strikes me as the most ridiculous conversation. I mean, it's sort of always stupid to call the most ridiculous conversation in this policy area, but this is a particularly stupid one. It makes no sense if you think about it for more than 5 minutes.
Can I just, Murph, isn't also part of what's happening here that the government's stepping down from where they were?
Yes.
So the government's position until recently was Liddell must stay open for longer. We need it for beyond 2023, which is when AGL wants to shut it down. And to be clear, Liddell is nearly 50 years old. It's running below capacity. Some of it, you know, it's creaking and dying, basically. And so then the government got a report, commissioned a report, along with the New South Wales government, on what was the impact of it shutting would be and what needs to be done. And the report found, it doesn't quite use this language, but the point is very clearly, don't keep Liddell open. It will be expensive. Someone will have to pay quite a lot to jump just so it can continue to run, and it will stop other people investing. So why would we do that?
Wind and solar generation to economic parity with traditional sources of generation. Now, renewables like solar and wind don't need subsidies. What they need is integration. And without adequate planning and integration, rapid deployment of renewables can lead to delayed connection, curtailed output, and congested transmission.
Was Scott Morrison seriously suggesting that renewable energy doesn't need subsidies anymore, but that fossil fuels do?
I think even people in the renewables industry accept now that that we don't really need to subsidise mature low emissions technologies like wind and solar, right? They've advanced. The subsidy mechanism has had this, what the wonks call a pull forward effect. It's pulled a lot of that technology into the market, and the renewable energy target has done a lot of that heavy lifting, right, over the last decade in pulling those technologies forward. So the renewables industry would say to you, wind and solar, we're probably at the end of the life of subsidies, but the new batch of low emissions technologies that are in their infancy, like hydrogen and other commodities like that, will need subsidies, right, in order to pull them through the market in the way that wind and solar have been pulled through the market. So at one level, it's not dumb of Morrison to say we don't need to subsidise some renewables anymore, right? But what is gobsmacking and incomprehensible is there is a universe where the government then says we don't need to subsidise mature renewable technologies, but we do need to subsidise mature fossil fuel technologies that have been around for, I don't know, how since the dinosaurs, right? Like this is nuts. This is the crazy world I never thought I would actually see. I'm sorry, that is nuts.
So, who are the winners from this policy announcement?
Well, we've got a way to go, Gabby, with which sort of loops us back to where we started in this conversation, that this is both something and nothing, right? Morrison is projecting we may do lots of this stuff. The Commonwealth, i.e. the taxpayer, may do loads of stuff, or if the private sector does stuff, we won't do any stuff. We just have to see what these characters do. Right, there's a minimalist version of this and a maximalist one, and both are possible, and we just got to see which one they do. If the government lands on a point where gas is a transitional fuel for a few years in order to get the energy market and manufacturing where we need it to be, which is low emissions production and energy, then fine, great. If it's the maximalist thing, though, that we're locking in gas because we're building all of this infrastructure, new power plants, new pipelines, new big hub in Queensland, if we're actually locking in the gas industry in Australia domestically and export for 40 years, well, the climate science is very clear. The climate science says we don't have time for that to be the strategy. So it's one of these hedge things where the answer to your question is we don't know who the winners are yet, or the losers, because we don't have enough information. I think the best way to sort of think about this is we just have to hope for the best. We hope for that the government is sort of pursuing the minimalist version of what it's telegraphing rather than the Big Bang, because the Big Bang is real bad.
With the minimalist version, could we still meet our obligations under the Paris Agreement?
Well, not with the minimalist version of everything the government's proposing at the moment. They'd have to change direction on a whole bunch of other things. So,
or technology would have to turn up and save them.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So, yes, it is possible. But is it possible that the government would be driving us in that direction based on the current landscape of policies? No.
So what has the reaction been to these announcements?
I think the reaction has been largely somewhere between a little negative to head scratching, even in circles that are more inclined to be polite about it. I think the view is that even those who would see some merit in some of the path that the government wants to go down are of the view that there's not much detail here, so why would we assume that any of this is going to happen? And then there's a whole raft of people, including the Energy Council, representing the big generators, everyone who's providing electricity for us, basically, and privately within some business circles, and certainly anyone who thinks that dealing with the climate crisis should be a top-line focus in what we're doing, think this is pretty much, you know, a bit of a mess that creates more problems than it solves, and that's probably the polite way to put it.
That's more than fair. I think, yeah, look, environmentalists are horrified. Obviously, the more you dig gas into your economy, the less likelihood we have of conforming with the climate science. So environmentalists are obviously very concerned. And as Adam referenced, from the energy sector's point of view, this just prolongs the uncertainty, just makes it more likely that people won't invest organically in their own right, because they never know when the Commonwealth is going to come in, redraw the boundaries of the market and make it favourable for one type of technology versus another. So it's sort of like people who are around this area of climate and energy are ground down by a decade of insanity, basically, and everybody looks hopefully at the landscape for any sign of sanity emerging anywhere.
If I could branch out for a second, look, also, I mean, I think ground down is exactly right. And we also live in a time, if we're thinking about this from a helicopter level, a lot of this is nuts, right? There is not advice that we have seen. There is not analysis that we have seen that says this is the way to go and we'll deliver what the government wants it to deliver. And yet we have a public discussion and also, you know, supported by a lot of our colleagues in our industry that normalizes this as just politics and reasonable part of public discussion. When actually, if you step back from it, this should be treated as, you know, fairly radical and extraordinary things to be proposing to do without an evidence that this is a sensible path, both either from an economic point of view, from a cost for consumers point of view, and obviously from a climate point of view. A lot of the discussion we see doesn't even seem to ask those questions.
And from a political point of view, why is the Liberal Party, the free market party, wanting to intervene in the energy market?
Well, this is the sort of Faustian pact that they made for themselves when they backed off a market mechanism. This is where it takes you. Mm. If you, for political reasons, decide to torpedo a market mechanism, which
is carbon price.
I mean the carbon price, yeah, what the coalition decided to do between 2010 and 2013 was basically turn their back on their own avowed orthodoxy for how policy should be made. And so as a consequence of that decision that was driven by politics, not by evidence or by reason or by consideration, it was driven entirely by politics, this is where you land. This is the consequence of it. You end up in a situation where you've removed the kind of organising idea of how you execute a transition in terms of a central policy mechanism, and then you set yourselves up as the arbitrary interveners in the market. And the Liberal Party of 2020 is a lot more comfortable with being interveners in the market than the Liberal Party of the mid-1990s. It's like in life, Gabby, right? You make decisions. The decisions you make accumulate. They set you on a path that leads you to an outcome that you may not have planned at the start. But this is a government that has to live with its accumulated decisions. And if they're not capable of basically drawing a line saying, look, actually, we've been wreckers and idiots for the best part of a decade, and now we need to do something else, and that's obviously a very difficult thing for any government to do, then this is the reality. This is the bequest of the carbon wars. This is why we're in this position.
Thanks to Adam Morton and Catherine Murphy for their time. If you'd like to read more of their reporting on gas or any other political or environmental issues, just head over to theguardian.com. This episode was produced by Joe Koning and Ellen Leibeater. The executive producers of the show are Miles Martignoni and me. I hope you have a lovely weekend, and we'll see you all on Monday.